studied the game films of the William Penn team, and they decided the William Penn statesmen were too powerful for Pillsbury, so they called off today's game, just plain forfeited it. I think that's to be commended. Face the facts, Coach. Your team just can't hack it. Saves a lot of bruises in the long run, and in the tackle particularly. Joe Garagiola talks real sports later this half hour. Sooner, here's music, Johnny Dance Band, and I'm walking.
Well, I'm walking, yes, indeed, and I'm a-talking about you and me, and I'm a-hoping that you come back to me, And I'm lonely as I can be, and I'm waiting for your company, and I'm hoping that you come back to me. Well, what are you gonna do when the well done dry? You gonna run away and hide? I'm gonna run right by your side. For you, pretty baby, I'd even die. I'm walking, yes, indeed, and I'm a-talking about you and me, and I'm hoping that you come back to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm lonely as I can be, and I'm waiting for your company, and I'm hoping that you come back to me. Well, what are you gonna do when the well run dry? You gonna run away and hide? What are you gonna do when I say bye-bye?
All you're gonna do is dry your eye.
I'm walking, yes indeed, and I'm talking about you and me, and I'm hoping that you come back to me. Well, wait for you, only hoping you come back to me. Well, what are you gonna do when the well runs dry? You gonna run away and hide? I'm gonna run right by your side.
For you, pretty baby, I'd even
die. I'm walking, yes indeed, and I'm talking about you and me, and I'm hoping that you come back to me.
Oh,
and I'm lonely as I can be, and I'm waiting for your company, and I'm hoping that you come back to me. I said you were coming back to me. I said you were coming back to me. I said you were coming back to me.
You were coming back to me.
Get down to it. Let's get down to it. The Lucite Penny Saver Sale is on right now, so don't you fail to paint right now and save right now. The Lucite Penny Saver Sale.
Right now, participating retailers are having a Lucite Penny Saver Sale. You can save a pile of pennies on Lucite. A good deal on a great paint.
The Lucite Penny Saver Sale.
Get down to it!
Next, World of Music, brought to you by your Baldwin dealer, who now has a brand new line of Baldwin home organs. This is Bill Cullen, and my guest is Bobby Short, right after this.
Baldwin announces... three brand new, easier than ever to play home organs, and priced lower than ever too. The Interlude, the Bravo, and the Encore. All jam-packed with fun. All give you automatic rhythms, including waltz, foxtrot, Latin, even rock. And you can have any of these organs with Wonder Chord. Play chords, pedal notes, and rhythm with just one finger. And then with the other hand, play a single note melody. With just two fingers, you're really swinging along. And they can be equipped with cassettes. Insert a tape, get an organ lesson right there at the organ. Even if you know nothing about music, in just a matter of days, you'll be playing popular songs and having the time of your life. See them at your Baldwin dealers now, if you really want to have some fun.
Why don't you buy an organ of Baldwin? We sell fun.
Well, Bobby Short is a singer and a pianist whose talent brings an enthusiastic response from both audiences and critics. He sings nothing but the very best in songs. He's even recorded Cole Porter songs that have never been recorded before. Bobby, how in the world could five Cole Porter songs have been ignored in the recording business?
Well, that's a very small number, because Mr. Porter was a prolific writer, as you probably know, and about 500 of his songs rest in the trunk.
Uh-huh.
Unpublished, unsung, unheard about.
Did you ever meet Cole Porter?
Oh, yes. He was a gentleman above all, and
yes,
quite shy, and extremely intelligent and very articulate when he chose to speak.
Something that interests me, Bobby, your biography describes you as the last of the sophisticated saloon singers. Now, for the people who might not be aware, tell us the kind of saloons you're talking about.
Well, the term is rather fairly generic, isn't
yeah.
it? A saloon, in my opinion, is a room where you go to sit and imbibe in alcoholic beverages and have a good time. I mean, it certainly, people call them cocktail lounges, they call them cabarets, they call them salons. I've been referred to as a salon singer. That's a very fancy term for it. I call myself a saloon singer because people do drink.
Yeah.
And sometimes the effects are rather more than what expected. So it becomes a saloon.
Unless our listeners get the wrong idea, the wrong impression of when we say saloon, the kind of place we're talking about, who are some of the people who regularly come to hear you? And
well,
I know because I'm there myself from time to time.
Well, they're very fancy saloon goers, I might add. I draw from the world of politics and, of course, the world of theater.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of society figures do come to see me. And then many musicians who are friends of mine and admirers come about. And then we draw from people who just happen to like good music.
Well, when you play in New York, you play at the Carlisle here.
I'm at the Carlisle 8 months out of the year.
Which is one of the fine spots.
Yes, I think
it
is.
So you probably, how about Onassis? You ever, Jackie Kennedy?
Well, they've
like
been
that.
Over, of course. Mrs. Onassis used to live at the Carlisle, and I think she has a lot of friends who still live there.
So that's what we mean by saloon, folks, in case you were wondering about the last of the sophisticated saloon singers. When you go out yourself, Bobby, what kind of an evening out? When you're not working, what do you like to do?
Well, I don't like to dress, number one, because my outfit at the Carlisle is always black tie. And I've become almost inordinately fond of blue jeans and denim. And I just don't like to put on a lot of fancy clothes. I like being comfortable, whatever I put on.
You also sing at parties, too, don't you?
From time to
time,
if it's possible. I've learned that I can't push myself like I used to when I was 18 and 20 years old.
And let's put it this way. You come high.
Yes, very high.
We're talking plain dollars and cents at this point, right?
It's worth it because it's my time off.
I mean, I'm not going to get you for any couple hundred bucks a night, right?
No, I don't think you will.
Bobby, next time I'd like to talk to you about your early life and about your book, Black and White Baby, okay?
Marvelous idea.
My guest has been Bobby Short, and now this final word from Baldwin.
Baldwin announces three brand-new, easier-than-ever-to-play home organs, all just jam-packed with fun. One is available with phantom fingers. Hold a chord and the organ plays runs up and down the keyboard automatically. Want some fun?
Why don't you buy an organ of Baldwin? We sell fun.
See and hear all the new easy-to-play Baldwin organs now at your Baldwin dealer. He sells fun. Join me later today when my guest on Baldwin's World of Music will once again be Bobby Short. Now let's hear Bobby sing an all-time favorite, Just One of Those Things by Cole Porter.
It was just one of those things, one of those crazy flings, one of those bells that now and then rings, one of those things. It was just one of those nights, one of those fabulous flights, a trip to the moon on gossamer wings, one of those things. If we thought of it, of the end of it, when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware our love affair was too hot not to cool down. So goodbye, dear, and amen. Here's hoping we'll be now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things. One of those things. One of those crazy flings. One of those bells that now and then ring. One of those things. One of those nights. One of those fabulous flights. A trip to the moon on gossamer wings. One of those things. If we thought of it, how
Rudolph. Goodbye and amen. Here's hoping we'll meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things.
Hi. This is Andy Granatelli, and I'm standing in a place that's very close to my heart, the STP Racing Research and Development Center in Santa Monica, California. You know, a lot of revolutionary cars have been built right here, like the screaming 837-horsepower supercharged Novi and the super hush quiet STP Turbine car. They both shook up Indianapolis. So did the STP Hawk, the car Mario Andretti drove to an Indy 500 victory for me and STP.
Got it.
What we've learned here can help your family car, too. Take oil filters. The three largest selling brands have a single filtering element, but we've added something extra, a filter in a filter, to help protect your engine against harmful sludge and abrasives. We call it the STP Double Oil Filter. Ask for it the next time you change oil.
The STP Double Oil Filter. Not just a single filter, but a filter in a filter to double clean your oil.
At just about 20 minutes past the hour, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Coot, I thought we were eloping, and here you are climbing around on this crummy downspout.
We're eloping, Marty. This is the quickest way I could think of to get up there.
Why, you're flakier than that flaky downspout.
Well, why don't you do something about it?
I'd have you committed, but a man's hard to find, especially at my age.
No, I mean, why don't you use Rust-Oleum?
How's that, bird brain?
Rust-Oleum. If you use Rust-Oleum to coat your gutters and downspouts, they won't flake and peel so much. Rust-Oleum sinks right in and grabs hold. It sticks instead of flaking off quick like regular paints.
Hey, what are you doing? You're pushing me off. I've changed my mind about eloping with you, clown. Just remembered the Rust-Oleum salesman in town is a cute little critter. Maybe I'll just invite him up to give me an appraisal.
Here's a song from Maud, Dance, 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 by the New Seekers.
I thought love had a rainbow on it. Used to think that love was a nightmare. That was up until when I first met you. Now I go around hoping you can. Dance, dance, spin it all around you. Dance, dance, dance. Never thought love had a rainbow on it. See the girl dance. See the girl dance. Mississippi mud never touched her fingers. California sand lathered her hair.
Nothing more than I could a day might linger.
Early in the morning I'll be her man.
Well, Joe Garagiola, pretty big name himself, talks about one of the big names in sports.
The stories out of his hometown were that he was a pretty good-looking football player as a kid, which should not surprise anybody. As a baseball catcher, he was good enough to get a tryout with the Chicago Cubs. Charlie Grimm, who remembers him, says that he wasn't a bad-looking catcher. But the sport that finally called him had to be the right one for him. He became the heavyweight champion of the world, a member of the Boxing Hall of Fame, and he never suffered a professional defeat. His name was Rocky Marciano. I guess most sports fans who aren't too young have memories of Rocky Marciano. There was a big sports banquet shortly after Marciano won the title, and the speakers included some very famous orators in and out of sports. Finally, it was Marciano's turn. In a Boston accent that was to become so familiar, Rocky said, "My remarks will be brief. To sit on a dais with speakers like Dr. Ralph Bunche and Mr. Herbert Bayard Swope make me realize that I should say what I have to say quickly and sit down. Okay? I can lick anybody in the joint." And he sat down. Rocky Marciano was not a flashy fighter, but he was an exciting one. He could punch. He might be in there looking like he was having problems, and then all of a sudden he'd throw a right hand, and everybody would get up and go home. The record book never tells a story of an athlete, but it can make some very good points. Marciano fought professionally 49 times and scored 43 knockouts. The other six times he won on a decision. But Marciano was never a guy to depend on his punching ability alone. He was a man who dedicated himself to boxing, took his instructions without question, and then made enough money so that when it was no longer fun for him, he could retire. I can still remember Rocky Marciano's description of his rise to the top and his only regret. He said, "It was tough, but I loved it. I liked the training and I liked the fighting. Only one tough night. That was the night I knocked out Joe Louis. I didn't want to fight him. I knew he wasn't the Joe Louis that was so great when I was a kid, but they told me that I'd have to fight Louis to get a shot at the title. I knocked Joe Louis out in the eighth round, and it made me feel awful." Then there was a night in Philadelphia's Municipal Stadium when Rocky challenged heavyweight champion Jersey Joe Walcott. It was a rugged fight, and both men were bleeding heavily. As the 13th round started, Marciano attacked. A long left of the body, and then a tremendous right to the jaw. And that was it. It was over. Rocky Marciano was the new world heavyweight champion. If you remember that night as I do, it might seem like yesterday, or like it was out of another time. But the calendar says that it was just 20 years ago tonight. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Yeah, Joe, I do remember listening to that fight. And if you'll pardon me, it was out of another time. Rocky Marciano, really great champion and a good guy. A tip for car owners. A stone or even a beetle striking a car doing 70 miles an hour can chip the paint. Well, don't leave the chip spots on your car. You'll end up with rust spots. Keep a tube of car paint handy. Touch up the chip spots as soon as possible. It'll save you a costly repainting job or a crummy-looking car. Now this.
Hi, fill it up.
Would you fill it with regular, please?
Sure.
Oh, excuse me, but what's in that red pump over there?
That's our new Shell Super Regular.
Sure, it's pretty red. Did you say super or regular?
I said Shell Super Regular. It's got the good drivability components of a modern regular to help prevent stallouts, and it has more octane than the average or ordinary regular to help protect against knocking. Want me to fill it up with Super Regular?
Sure, red's my favorite color.
Morning. Fill her up?
Yeah, you know, I got stuck behind this car pulling a trailer up a hill. And every time I tried to pass, I'd hear this ping, ping, ping from the engine.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I just gave up and decided to follow him.
Just might be the gasoline. Your car used regular?
Yeah.
Well, we've got our new low-lead Shell Super Regular over here in this red pump.
Oh, the red pump?
Uh-huh. Has many of the high-octane components of a super in it. Might be just what you need. Want to try it?
Yeah, fill it up. That trailer's still out there. Ahead of me.
Step up to Shell's new Super Regular. You may never settle for ordinary regular again.
Thank you.
this, Bill Cullen with Monitor stopping at your station, but we'll get up steam again just a few minutes from now.
This is Graham Kerr on NBC Emphasis, the Galloping Gourmet. I'm going to stir up a little controversy. Have you ever done that? It's marvelous fun on NBC for you.
Monitor Music here, Freda Payne singing Through the Memory of Mine, and then Percy Faith plays Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Through the memory of my heart.
the September 23rd Monitor. Hey, this week there was a report from the Census Bureau that revealed this. You ready? The more money a family makes, the more likely the marriage is to last. We needed a census to find out that. They keep telling us things we all know firsthand. We don't know much about life in the Soviet Union, however, and we're going to learn from our guest in this half hour. We'll meet her 3 minutes from now. An old Chicano sing, "Satisfy Me, Woman." Americans, including President Nixon, have visited the Soviet Union, but few of them have seen more than the tourist sites and heard more than the official Communist Party version of life in that country, and that might even include the president. An exception, of course, is Susan Jacoby. I say, of course, because she lived in Moscow for 2 years, while her husband was a correspondent there for a Washington newspaper. And a writer-reporter herself, she has described her meetings with Soviet citizens in a book called Moscow Conversations. Well, Mrs. Jacoby, the biggest hurdle for most Americans in Russia, of course, is the language. So my first question to establish a little bit, how is your Russian?
My Russian is quite good. I studied it in college, although my spoken Russian I really learned there. It's good enough to take my dog to the veterinarian and describe the whole history of his nervous illnesses in Russian.
I would say that's very good Russian then. When you were there, were you carefully watched while you were in Moscow?
Sometimes. Our apartment was bugged, our phones were
really?
Tapped. We knew the phones were tapped because occasionally if a Russian made a date to meet us on the phone, the KGB, the secret police, would show up at the meeting place. However, We weren't followed all the time. Whenever we called a Russian, we tried to call from a payphone, and they called us from a payphone. And some of this depended on the state of Soviet-American relations in general, whether they kept a close eye on you or not.
What specifically were they trying to find out about you and your husband and the Russian people you met?
Well, two things. First of all, this is still a society which is interested in which regards contacts between their citizens and foreigners with suspicion, mm-hmm. so that they want to know which of their citizens are having contact with foreigners. Secondly, my husband and I were both journalists.
Yeah.
And there is a rather a definite feeling that a lot of journalists must somehow be spies, or if they're not spies, they're somehow working against the interests of the Soviet Union, so that they have to tolerate us because, after all, they want their journalists over here, too, mm-hmm. but they like to keep tabs on any contacts between foreigners and Russians.
When and where were you able to meet with the Russians?
Well, in lots of different ways. It depended on the Russian. If the Russian were rather brave, say if he were a political dissenter, mm-hmm. He might meet you anywhere. You might meet at his home. They might come to your home. For other people, we were never in their homes. We would meet in parks or in public cafes or places like that.
And talk about what kind of things. I mean, what was your main interest in meeting with them? Purely social?
No. It depended on the person.
Mm-hmm.
It depended on how brave they were. With some of the political dissenters, we grew to have such a natural relationship that we talked about a lot of things you'd talk about anywhere, you know, sex, uh-huh. you know, anything else.
What questions did you find the Russian people asked you as an American most?
They wanted to know a lot just about our standard of living. For example, what things cost here, how mm-hmm. many people can have cars, what apartments cost, what kind of food is available in the stores, things like that, records, record players.
When you answered them, were they surprised? Have they been led to believe differently from the truth?
Sometimes.
As far as our life is concerned?
For example, she's in my book. I describe one young acquaintance of mine who was a student, and she was convinced that all blacks were barred from American universities.
Mm-hmm.
She believed this. And she believed that, she didn't believe there were any public schools. She believed you had to pay for your education, you know, beginning in the first grade and things like that. And she was surprised when I told her that wasn't so. But many of our friends were not by any means that ignorant at all. Many of them were quite sophisticated. And they would want to know things more like our system in regard to the press, you know, was the press censored? If so, how? What was the relationship between business and the newspapers? That kind of thing.
Do the foreign correspondents, so that's what your husband was
yes.
there, where do they live in Moscow? Do they all live in the same area?
All foreigners, not just correspondents, but diplomats, businessmen, live in various apartment compounds around Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
They are guarded by the KGB. The guard posts are there mainly to check on Russians who come in,
uh-huh.
to see that Russians don't go in and out of these compounds freely. Most of them have high fences around them. And not just Americans live in them, but all of the foreigners, including foreigners from the communist countries in Eastern Europe.
How far outside Moscow are you able to travel? I hear you can't just roam the country.
No. When you go anywhere outside about a 25-mile radius of Moscow, you have to apply for special permission to travel. Now, this is generally quite routinely granted. However, if you're a journalist, for example, if you've written stories they don't like, one of the ways they're nasty to you is they refuse permission to travel. But my husband mm-hmm. and I both traveled a good deal.
Well, let's put the question this way. We've gotten this far with your experiences over there, and I think we'd be remiss not asking this. Would you say that they have a more difficult life over there, the average Soviet citizen, as far as their privacy and their social life is concerned, than we have over here?
Oh,
the fact that they're watched like that.
If you mean, does the government intrude into private life?
Yes,
but this doesn't affect the majority of citizens because the majority of people aren't that politically interested. Most of the intellectuals we knew certainly wanted more freedom, freedom to read, freedom to express themselves, freedom to associate with whom they wanted to mm-hmm. associate, yes.
Mm-hmm. Susan Jacoby, we'd like to get your opinion on some specific Russian problems, the Jewish people who want to leave Russia, the position of women in the Soviet Union, and the plight of writers like Solzhenitsyn. Will you stay with us while we take a brief time out, Susan?
I certainly will.
Okay, we'll be back soon with Susan Jacoby, author of Moscow Conversations, right here on the Monitor Beacon. Susan Jacoby spent 2 years in Moscow, and she's written a book about the people she met and talked with there. It's called Moscow Conversations. Mrs. Jacoby, were you able, while in Russia, to talk with any of the Jewish people there?
Yes, we had many Jewish friends of different opinions. We had friends who wanted to leave and indeed have since left, have emigrated to Israel or via Israel to America. We had Jewish friends who considered themselves very assimilated and did not want to leave.
It's their home and they want to stay there. Why don't they want people to leave Russia?
Because they don't want any evidence. They don't want to admit, really, that any large number of people, indeed any people, are dissatisfied with Soviet life. Mm-hmm. Certainly I believe from my experiences in the Soviet Union, if emigration were completely free, I think that most people would not choose to emigrate. And not just Jews, but other people, because people tend to stick with their country unless it's so terrible. But they don't want to admit that anybody, you know, prefers anything else.
Yes, I wonder if they just lifted all the bans, I imagine it would be a very small percentage
of
people.
It would be a small percentage, that's right, because people just don't pack up and leave their country that easily.
And a lot of people can't, economically and family ties and things like that. Well, what about the problem now of their writers being restrained, like Solzhenitsyn? Are the Soviet citizens, A, aware that they are being restrained? And if they are they outraged about it? Double-edged question.
Many are aware. The educated people in general long for more freedom in this respect. For example, Solzhenitsyn was published during the Khrushchev years, and he's not published since, and this troubles many people. Many of the people I knew, certainly, it bothered them. But outrage is a term that could be applied to a few people we know who are political dissidents. But Russians have an attitude about censorship which an American can never fully understand. For example, a group of visiting Russian women were here. I interpreted for them. They bought some of these pornographic magazines on 42nd Street. Uh-huh. And they said to me, this is your freedom. You know, this is your freedom from censorship. And it's very difficult to explain to a Russian the idea that the goodness that comes from freedom of expression outweighs the bad things. In other words, say, the flood of pornography.
Right.
They don't believe that and they don't understand it.
In other words,
in my experience,
the complete freedom that comes with our non-censorship. Certainly, there's some bad there, some things we'd like to. But the very fact, I think, that we don't crack down on it and stop everything is to our credit in this country.
Yes, but they don't see it that way.
No.
Most of the Russians, even the Russians I knew who wanted more freedom of expression, didn't believe in absolute freedom from censorship. What they believed was that the censor should have wider limits. You know, Solzhenitsyn should be published, but that doesn't mean everything should be published.
So they are, in a sense, then, very, very much conditioned in their entire life right up to now. They've been conditioned in Pavlov's theory.
I only met a very small minority of people who really believe that there should be no censor. Mm-hmm. They were interesting people.
They must have been. But you did meet, there are those. Yeah. Most Russian women work. And that, of course, is because so many Russian men originally were killed in World War II that there was a critical labor shortage. And the women just got into the habit of working and continued. At least that's what I've been led to understand. Has the fact that women work brought about a more advanced stage of women's liberation than there is in this country, or less advanced?
No.
Not at all.
No, it's true that most women work. 75% of the doctors are women, more than half of the lawyers are women.
75%?
Yes, that's
interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And half the lawyers?
And half the lawyers.
Very interesting.
A third of the scientific research workers. But the women do everything at home, too. It hasn't changed the traditional role of women in relation to the family
work,
at all.
There is
a lot of griping about this in the official press. A lot of articles about it, about the fact that women have to bear so much of the double burden. Sometimes there are exhortations for men to help their women and such, but they don't have a lot of effect. My Russian women friends were very surprised when my husband cleared the table and things like this.
Well, as a foreigner, how were you treated as a woman? Were you treated equally with your husband? By them?
By Russians, yes.
You were?
Yes.
That's very interesting. Obviously, you found Russia a fascinating place to visit, but in summing up, the question always asks, would you like to live there?
No, I would not like to live there for the rest of my life. I'd like to go back, though.
Thank you for telling us about your experiences in Russia. Susan Jacoby, author of Moscow Conversations. And do svidaniya.
Пока. Till the next time.
You know, there was a time when if someone told you to do something, you did it. Bam, right on. No questions asked. It was yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. You never said no, you know? But you know, things are changing nowadays. It's a new day, babies.
Folks want to take their own lives into their hands and make their own choices. No longer do they want to go along with the program because everybody says it's right. You know what I mean? Let me tell you what I'm talking about. You see, because I don't want no gold watch for working 50 years from 9 to 5. Oh, while the boss is guzzling champagne and I'm building beer in some dive. Because I want to be happy and free, living. A natural man. A natural man. A natural man.
Well, that's Lou Rawls singing Natural Man. Tell you what, let's follow that one with one of Cher's latest hits. This one's called Don't Hide Your Love.
You never give yourself completely. It's just that you've been hurt before. You're so afraid to let me love you. Never leave an open door. Don't judge me by some other lover who broke your heart and walked away. Come, let's be fair with one another. My world is yours, I swear it. I say the word and together, 'cause I'm gonna
That's share and don't hide your love. A message here, please, from the American Red Cross. Hurricane Agnes left towns devastated and hundreds of people killed. The need for flood relief is over $10 million. Please help. Send contributions to the American National Red Cross Flood Relief, Washington, D.C., 20006. In Brazil 77 with the crab. Tell you what, we're going to make way for the news here, and then there'll be more of Monitor. This is Bill Cullen, and we'll be back soon.